they said that more and more buyers are trying to get that B2C experience in a B2B world. And the fascinating number that they found, though, was like 23% of people who do go through a self-help process usually have some kind of buyer remorse, because even though they could buy it themselves, they realize there's a part here where I still want to get some technical guidance, guide them and give them an opportunity to have an experience so that they can be able to make the best decision so they don't have to buy remorse.
Welcome to Aligned, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode of Aligned, Sean talks with the sales evangelist, Donald Kelly, about helping relationships. In this episode, they discuss late stage sales, self-help, and five application models that you can apply to late stage selling. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Welcome back to Centricity. We're in an interesting conversation about helping relationships. How do you get more deals across the table at the close? What are the biggest mistakes? You can listen to the first episode to hear that. We're talking about how to solve problems right now. We just got done with an interesting conversation about how guided help is one of the two techniques that gets people across the finish line. And we're going to dive into now the second one, self-help. We're talking about Centricity, the focus of this podcast and this series with Donald C. Kelly. Donald is an expert in sales. I am the balance to his crazy sales talk with marketing thinking. And together, maybe, you know, we have some decent ideas to share. Thank you for joining us again, Donald.
Well, I'm excited to be here, man. Thank you so much for having me. It's a fun topic. And I know the last time we were on, we discussed some stuff that was getting me riled up. And I know we're going to dive further into that today. So I came with my riled up shoes and hydrated.
Let's go. Donald, would you ever carry a piano down a flight of stairs? I mean, you're a stud, but would you do it?
No. Can I tell a story about it?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So this is a perfect situation. You're framing this up exactly. We had a deal we could not refuse. We got an offer we couldn't refuse. Piano fell off of a truck. I'm just kidding. No. One of my friends, their family, they were downsizing and they had two pianos. One of them was her mom and then she had another one, a newer one that they had for storage. So she asked if we would like to buy this piano. It was a baby grand. She said $500. We didn't have our son yet. And we're like, this is a stupid to say no. We're going to pay $500 for it. Got $500 for it. It was probably worth like $5,000. But anyways, we said yes. And I have a good friend from our church. He's a piano mover. He says, call these guys, help you. I called the guys. They came and they helped. It was literally like maybe 5 miles, Sean, and it was 150 for this and then another piece. It was like $250. And I was like, man, this was like expensive moving this piano. But I saw what they did. I saw it and I understood. I'm like, these guys, if they could do that, I could do that.
Perfect.
We moved from our townhouse now into our bigger house. So I YouTubed just to refresh myself, self-help a little bit on this process. And I went ahead and started moving the piano, my brother. Oh my goodness, Sean. Luckily, we did not break his leg, but we put the tilt the piano over just like they did in a YouTube video. We had pressure on one leg. The leg broke. Piano fell. The money that came to spend in the tuning and fixing it would have been crazy. But I did have a friend and he gave us a pretty good, helped us out with it. So the piano's tuned and now we moved it. Broken leg and all with a bunch of people help. But he said, do not try to move this piano by yourself again. There's certain times in life where you need a piano mover. And a lot of those situations go back to this point. I would never dare try to take one down a flight of stairs. I would never try to move a piano myself again. So that's my story there. So whatever you're going to say, hopefully it falls in line with that.
Well, I think there's appropriately enough, if it had been a smaller piano or maybe a guitar that your friend had sold you, self-help would have been okay to carry a guitar down the stairs. Sometimes you need a guide, right? And we focus on that emerging middle market B2B space. And often there is the need for a guide. You need an engineer, a third-party consultant. You need perspective. You need to understand operationally how to use a product or service or how to get the most benefit out of it. Now, that's the guided help. That is one of the two techniques that the behavioral science that we ground centricity in points to, and that's guided help. Listen to the first episode, part one. What we want to talk about today is, when is it a guitar? When can I help? And how does sometimes that lead, that self-help, lead into a guided help relationship? And I'm thinking of a company right now that is talking to us about helping them. Brilliant company. They've built a way to increase the efficiency of fluids in motors by about 80% through science. Yeah. Well, what's really interesting is they came to me and said, you know what? We're selling this product online, not only online, but on Amazon. I'm like, well, this morning I bought furnace filters on Amazon, but should you sell, you know, chemicals from one business to another business on Amazon? I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea. But as I considered it more, I thought that's really interesting. You know, in, we've seen in other settings, we've seen how businesses will do called a taste and see methodology. Hey, if you'll install our product or service, you know, let's say there's a fleet of 1,000 products on site and I'm selling a replacement for that. Well, I'll set you up with 5. Let's benchmark the other product to this product and then you run it. We're out. Mm-hmm. We'll just install it. We'll make sure it's up and running. We're available as a guide if you need it. But here, try it. And this company, this technology company out of Arkansas, Vintech, they are selling their samples. They give their customer a way to buy and try, taste and see. And the brilliance is that they don't have to call you sales types. You know, Donald C. Kelly is a sales type. I don't, because we're all scared of salespeople, right? I don't have to call sales. I don't have to get on the, okay, I'm going to point to the marketing schmuck now. I don't have to get on the marketing guy's radar and start getting all the emails. I don't want the follow-up calls. I don't want Donald bothering me. I just want to try it. I know how to use this chemical. You know, think about this like it's grease. It's grease that makes it run. I mean, I know I've got mechanics that can install this. I just want to try it.
Yeah.
And then that can lead, in their case, that leads then to an OEM, an original equipment manufacturer, who says, you know what? I want to make this part of my product. Then they get into the guided help second and they say, well, great. Well, let's look at your manufacturing line. Let's design our chemicals and kit it so that your people on the manufacturing line don't have to measure and apply. We're going to prepackage it for your assembly, for your setting. We're adding value. It's not just buckets of stuff and then it's your problem. So it's a brilliant methodology. I think it's a great example of self-help. And how can you create? I think B2B companies have to find ways to create self-help opportunities for their buyers. We were talking earlier about Carvana. I think that was the story you wanted to tell.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It ties closer with that one too. Both of them, yeah. But go back to this.
Carvana is just a great B2C example, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, wait a second. I mean, I'm 58, right? When I got to buy my first car, my dad drove me over to Bessemer. We went to a car lot. Bessemer is a small city outside of Birmingham, Alabama. And we talked to the sales guy, right? And then we walked the lot and we talked in the examples. I mean, now I can buy it on my phone or Vroom. I can buy it on my phone.
Yes, sir.
That's crazy. Yes, sir. And I thought, get it delivered. Yeah, delivered. And I thought my first reaction, and maybe a younger person wouldn't have this reaction. My first reaction was, no, I got to go see it. Mm-hmm. Well, Donald, if I was on the lot and I lift the hood, what do you think my abilities are to evaluate that? Nothing. Zero.
Yeah. The company is not going to sell you a car without an engine. Or if they're that transparent, they're not going to sell you a car with a bad engine, right?
Comes back to trust. You know, I had a friend who did very well, sold a business, and he went out and did the cliche guy thing to do, bought a Porsche.
Hey.
And he got it delivered. And his name was Joe. I said, Joe, did you test drive it? And he looked at me and said, it's a Porsche. Like, I mean, Carvana has taken that down to self-help. You can self-help and avoid all the things. And that's this idea of frictionless buyer journeys. Mm-hmm. When you're at the closing table, can you create a B2B self-help? Maybe it's an incremental sale. And maybe it's the only sale you need, but can you create a self-help opportunity? Can you be a Carvana? Yeah. Can you be a Vintech? Can you leverage the footprint? And just what I think is brilliant about the Amazon example is, yeah, do you lose margin? Yes. Does Amazon own your customer? Do they know all the data? But yeah, I mean, I get all that. But Amazon also has a distribution network. Mm-hmm. And a company that can't afford to build their own distribution network, it's done. Do you lose margin? Sure. But you didn't have to set up a distribution network. Did you hear that part?
Exactly. That's a huge component, a huge side. And I have a client on Amazon as well, similar situation where, yes, they take a piece. She's on Prime. So it's like, you know, the client can get it in, you know, 2-day shipment. And yes, people do have it over there. But, you know, what we see too is they come back to our website or to her website in that case. And she has leaflets and things that she put inside of it and they come back. But in this situation, cash is king for a small company like hers. Like, okay, yeah. Amazon could have them in that case, but I'm getting the cash and they know where we are and they come back. We see the data. So anyways, go back to this Carvana. I want to speak to this a little bit and have some notes here. Just really pumped about it. I think it's a brilliant idea. When I first heard about it, similar concept. I was born in 84, so I have that. The knowledge that I have, go test drive and see this thing. And I remember the first, even with like Uber, first I was like, who's going in a stranger's car? But in college, I did that. I did Uber in college. Literally, we would drive from, I was in Idaho to Salt Lake. You had the big airport there and kids would drive down. I didn't know who they were, but we'd jump in their cars. They would put us up, posted something on a bulletin board. It was a micro setting that was something that was applied in a larger setting. But the go back to trust, that's important. But here's what happened with buyers now. Most of us who are in, I think the study shows that 50% of people who are in buying decision right now are millennials, folks who've grown up with technology or a large portion of their adult life or, you know, teenage years. The first thing I bought online was shoes from American Eagle. And I remember I was like 15 or so and putting a credit card. My mom was freaking out, Jamaican mom. But we put a credit card online at that point and we got product like 2 weeks later in the mail. It goes to show that we're comfortable with that process. So in the B2B space, here's the stat that we're seeing, some of the things that's going on right now, that more and more of the buyers, because of buying committees on a B2B side, they are trying to behave like they're B2B purchasing. And here's one way that this is a perfect example. When I sold software, the way that the sales process was, Sean, this was back, you know, in the early 2010 era, is where we would put, we would get somebody for a discovery, call them on the phone, get them for a discovery call or initial conversation. Then we have a deeper discussion. After the deeper discussion, we got enough information, then do a demo. Try doing that process right now and you'll be screwed, because the way most of the buyers want, they don't want to do this portion, this dance and pony show and the 2000 questions that you ask. They want to be able to look at your software on your website or YouTube and to see if that could help them out. So in that B2B selling space, you can apply that B2C mentality by giving them the opportunity, because I do it all the time and you do it too. You probably did it when you looked at Riverside or some of these other software. Just go to their website. You get a mini demo to see how this thing actually functioned first and how it could work in your organization. I love HubSpot does a great job of that with their website, their YouTube channel. So I see it, I experience it. And then from there, then I can go to the when I feel ready to bring the salesperson in, because there's a part where I just don't understand some of these details. And that's where I need you to tell me, help me to see how I can put it in my organization. I need to first see, can this work in my company? Or, you know, how could I imagine it? And then you could come in and say, well, Donald, here's the technicality of how HubSpot will integrate with the other stuff that you're doing and how this can work effectively for you. And that's where later in that process. So we're seeing that in the B2B world where you can marry the two and bring them in. Gartner had an interesting study as well, and I'll shut up after this here, Sean, is that they said that more and more buyers are trying to get that B2C experience in a B2B world. And the fascinating number that they found, though, was that 23% of people who do go through a self-help process usually have some kind of buyer remorse, because even though they could buy it themselves, they realize there's a part here where I still want to get some technical guidance. And us as the organization understanding that can give a step back and let them basically come into the store and go look, however, guide them and give them an opportunity to have an experience so that they can be able to make the best decision so they don't have the buyer remorse. So there's a spot there where we can help. Early on, we may not necessarily need to baby them, give them the latitude to explore. And then later on in that process, throughout the whole journey, you need to be the guide though and help them set up a process where they can be guided through that. But that's where the smart people like you come from with the marketing side.
Yeah, compliments get you everywhere. Yeah, I think that that's an incredible application. I'm sitting here thinking through, what does Apple teach us about B2B that we could learn from? And, you know, they elevate service. They don't have clerks, right? They've got geniuses and they're set aside differently with their t-shirt. You have to earn that genius category. Well, that sounds a lot like a tech help or a support. You have appointments. I mean, you can't, but I mean, it's a laptop. It's a phone, it's a consumer product, but it's very, so they've really built a really good model of self-help. And then when you need it, there's expertise available. So what would that do? That would lower their cost of operations by getting you to buy your own stuff, buy your own AppleCare, buy your own. So it lowers their cost of operations and improves your customer service. Well, that sounds a lot like something that everybody should try. So self-help versus this guided relationship. I think the B2B world should learn from that. The other key factor of self-help in B2B space is the multiple decision maker dynamic. Most B2B buys are complex. There's multiple decision makers, or at least influencers. So the Sandler data that we were referring to earlier also points toward 95% saying that respondents in the survey saying that 95%, this is the most important factor in deciding who to work with, was who demonstrated strong knowledge of their challenges and then provided solutions. And that's,
do you know
that's
why,
what you're talking
sorry.
About. Go.
Do you know why this is the case too? Here's the other crazy stat that we see. It's not like, why do you think that's the case? Why do you think, Sean, and there's no wrong answer per se here, but what do you feel? And I think
you took away all my safety there.
I know. I want you to feel like, I have to give the perfect answer. But, why do you feel that so many people are part of that process now, that evaluation process?
I mean, safety, right?
Boom! Come on, Sean. Come on. Here's the thing. Like, it has nothing to do with, like, is this product going to work or not? And especially right now, today is October 19th, there's that R word that's looming around even more so, the tightening of the economy. I don't want to be that idiot that makes the investment on something that doesn't work, that hinders our organization, that limits my ability for promotion, or gets me fired over the next 6-7 months. I want to make sure that this is balanced. Sean, sign off on it. Mary, sign off. Hey, this was all a committee. They're not going to fire all of us at this point. No one wants to stick their neck out. But if I could come as that guy, and this is why, again, the great sellers and great marketing teams can succeed if we work together. If we can come with that guide and help people to eliminate the risk for folks in those situations, show them and demonstrate that we have done this before and we know the issues that they're going facing and addressing their concern about their own personal capital, man, come on. You're going to be so much more effective and successful in that process.
I love it when you get fired up, don't
I? Come on.
Because it's important. It means you've seen it work. It's awesome.
The FitzMartin approach to research is simple. Start with data. We use statistical analysis and data visualization to clarify the haze around customer sentiment, behavior, and lifetime value metrics. Our most recent study helped a financial institution understand a group of new customers, identify their ideal customers, and craft a plan to acquire more of those ideal customers. Visit fitzmartin.com/solutions. Again, that's fitzmartin.com/solutions to download a free sales barrier analysis worksheet to find the gaps and barriers in your organization and read for yourself about the values a partnership with FitzMartin can deliver to you.
I think the content, marketers, you've got to be equipped to help and understand sales, how to get across the finish line. Have you ever considered, or executives who've hired an agency or have a marketing staff, have you ever heard people talking about the reasons to provide content? Is this reason? It's this multiple decision maker. It's content. It's the fact that whoever demonstrates the strongest knowledge, you know, then that's either it's interesting because it's content from an expert, i.e. a guide, but it's accessible, self-accessible. I don't have to go through a gate. Marketers, put down your gates, quit making me put my name in or put my email in. Just let me see your content. It's fine. Get rid of the gates. So go. All right. Five applications. Let's talk about self-help while we're there. Application number one, B2B. I'm going to put my prospect hat, my client hat on.
Let's go.
Donald, we're B2B. You can't do self-help in B2B. Get over it. Terrible idea. Tell me what you're saying.
Oh, whatever you sell, you can have B2C a part of that process. And the easiest component is this part. Give me an industry. Let's make up an industry, Sean. Give me one.
Oil and gas.
One that could never use B2C experience. What is it?
Oil and gas. Upstream oil and gas. We're drilling holes in the earth and pulling fossil fuels out.
And who are they selling to?
To the refineries.
Selling to the refineries. Here's the thing that will happen within this process. I would say the biggest component right there is look at the audience that's coming into that industry. Again, go back to the millennials, go back to the younger generation. I think that's just still a little aged in that oil and gas. But however, there's still younger folks that are coming into the business. A lot of these people still have those beliefs and those things about like maybe the future or like, you know, energy efficiency and, you know, sustainability. Can you demonstrate through, because 65% of the population is visual, can you demonstrate through video or demonstration in your process early on in that how you are not only providing, can provide for them oil and gas, but how you're doing this in a sustainable way? You can say it all you want, but when you demonstrate how this is and go out and have some ducks run around and birds and you show that demonstration, that's a demo. That's a B2C process that you're doing where you're educating them way before they even met with you or meet with you, decide to do business with your organization. So I think that's a perfect example.
Love it. All right. So let's say people don't trust you, Donald. People don't trust me. Do we trust McKinsey? So McKinsey just did a study. Take a guess at what the level of dollar level of B2B buyers said they're willing. 99% of B2B buyers said, I'll spend X dollars online self-help.
What percentage?
99% of buyers.
99 cent.
X dollars. What's
we'll
the
spend
X?
We'll spend, I think, say $10,000.
50.
$50,000.
That's a significant, and I can hear it right now. Ah, that's a big CapEx. There's going to be multiple decision makers. I'm just telling you what the survey says. And if you're going to argue, call McKinsey, not me. it's interesting because people are finding.
It's big CapEx for who?
For the buyer,
But not for enterprise buyers. Though.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, $50,000 is a rounding error.
I got a credit card. I got an MX card to do that.
That's true. That's 100% true. That's a very good observation. I stand corrected. You know, their research is saying that 60-70% of people are willing to identify solutions, evaluate suppliers. They'll actually order and they'll reorder. So now we're talking about lifetime value. So we've got to start implementing self-help in the B2B world. It's just there. People want it. And we've been taught, and we've just all been taught to do it. I'll say it again. I ordered furnace filters. This morning, I heard a funny noise in my air return. I opened it. There was no filter. I had taken out the dirty one and never replaced it. I was like, well, I guess I'll go by the big box store. And then 10 minutes later, I'm like, or I can have it done right now. Bought it on a subscription model. Not only did I just buy the filter, I bought a subscription model. I don't ever have to think about filters again. Now, that's a B2C story. But why do you think when I go to work, I'm going to shift everything? No, now I want to do it the hard way. I want to get my fax machine out. And
we got to do, and I, you know, even Amazon, they croach in on that too. So with the business side, they were in a lot of ads pushing towards. People were doing it before, but now, you know, from like Staples and those other ones where, you know, you may have to go into the store or go on a phone and order stuff. And now they're doing it online. But Amazon, you can go and get your business supplies. Just come to the office. Like,
love it.
Dumb, easy. Within 2 days or maybe the same day.
Application number two, we're going to go to guided help. Sandler says that the least important factor is having the lowest price in vendor selection. Mm. So does that sound right? And if it's right, what do we do with that? How's a guide impact that?
So to repeat that one more, the lowest price.
Hey, that vendor has the lowest price. We're going to buy them. No, that's not what the research is showing, right? No. What the research is showing is there's a lot of people with a similar price. I'm constantly surprised when I share with, when I get shared, somebody tells me, yeah, we talked to two or three other firms like yours. And I'm thinking, oh man, I know we were the most expensive. I don't think I've ever learned that we were the most expensive, which just means I need to change my pricing, right? but it's constant. It's interesting how industries all kind of share the same pricing models. And so rarely do people choose what the Sandler research is saying based on price. That comes back to that motivation. Yeah, it's that 60-40 rule. Yeah, 40% of the reason to change is there's a better solution, there's a better product, there's a better service. And only 2.8% of the Sandler people, the respondents, said that they got better prices and that's why they changed. Why then are they looking back? It's service. The incumbent supplier of the product or service didn't do a good job servicing them. The buyer no longer felt valued. The sales guy, and it's never the marketing guys, Donald, it's the sales guys, made huge promises that didn't get lived up to. So why do we keep selling? So here's the second application. Make promises around things like service, around things like valued promises and measurement that can be followed up with. And again, it's a B2C example that we could learn from. Cancer Treatment Centers of America. We've all seen their ads. They're constant. They're incredibly heavily marketed. I believe the owners are up out of Chattanooga. It's a brilliant concept. What is their promise? Next time you see that ad, I want you to listen to their promise. You're going to get an appointment in 24 hours. Simpler than that, we're going to answer the phone.
Wow.
Now,
wow.
We're talking about cancer. Donald, I've just told you that you've got cancer. You're scared.
Yeah.
And I, as a marketer, as a salesperson, I'm thinking like, oh yeah, we got to talk about our technology and our doctors and
radiation,
the best outcomes and techniques and da, 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 da. You know what people need? Answer the phone.
Wow.
Get me an appointment. I expect you to have the technology. I expect you to have the best doctors. I expect your solution. So when we market, we forget that. We do all of our marketing. 40% of the people are looking for a better solution or a better price. What about the 60%? I'm not a huge Vegas fan, but I'm pretty sure the odds point to where you want to put your bet, right? You've at least got to put it in the mix of messages. It doesn't have to be, you can't just say, all we do is get you an appointment and answer the phone, right? It does. It seems ridiculous that that's the promise in healthcare, but we've all tried to get on the phone with somebody in the healthcare world. So that might be a unique situation, but your industry has a unique situation like that too.
Yeah.
So why not focus that? I think that's a way to win more late stage deals. Yes, keep talking about your product, keep talking about your solution. But remember, it's not about the price. You know, it's not about the price. Remember to mention your service, mention your promises.
Yeah.
How are you going to validate your promises? Which brings up application number three, testimonials. All right. I think marketing firms do a great disservice to business with testimonials because most advertising firms, and I very carefully use the word advertising there, see a testimonial as an early stage tool to get interest, to get people to a website or a call to action. That's true. But remember our subject, we're at the closing table. How do we close more deals? Well, one way is to do a testimonial that is focused only, this is critical, it's not on your website. Or if it's on your website, it's on a page that's not in your navigation. It's only delivering information that's safe and that matters to them that late stage. So I've got two or three products. I'm considering Donald C. Kelly as my provider. And I've got everybody can solve my problem. Okay. In some manner, maybe you could be a little, maybe you're not even as good. But if you give me a testimonial as a buyer telling me Donald's company did what they said. My favorite thing about Donald's company is they set a benchmark and they come back quarterly and measure to see how they're doing. Donald's service organization, you know, did this and that. They got on the Learjet and took me the part that I needed to. I mean, you know, that set of testimonials is meaningless to an early stage buyer, but at the closing table, powerful. So has your agency built or your marketing department, built testimonials that are all around onboarding, testing, results, benchmarking, follow-up, customer service. Do you even bring your customer service people to the table? If 60% of the people are saying, I fired my last guy, not because of their product or service. I fired them because of their service delivery, and I promised them because they didn't do what they promised. Bring them to the table. Ask mm-hmm. them, say, hey, these are the people that you're going to work with. Ask them the questions. They're going to tell you how they do this, or do it on a video, do it a landing page. It's just for late stage people. It's an incredible application of this helping and self-help tools, and it's late stage.
Love it. Love it.
That's simple and concise. All right, let's go on. Application number four. Have you ever, Donald, seen, you know, early access to expertise? We mentioned earlier PhD Bengali, you know, and that kind of giving him a platform at a trade show is giving a taste of early access. You know, like if you work with us, this PhD is going to be the person thinking through your project. That's a good example of early access to what a client's going to experience. It's a taste and see. We mentioned, hey, let's put five of our units install and let you play with them, let you work with them, let you, it will give you, you don't have to sign the purchase order for $18 million. Just try it. You know? Have you ever used that technique? I know you've got a lot of software in your background. You mentioned a software example earlier.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely an effective one. We did, when we sold to city county governments, especially companies in Texas, I mean, organization Texas is weird. They always want to see the white in your eyes and they always want to test it out with their solution. So setting up a dummy system for them with their usage and their experience was very helpful. It's kind of like that taste and see knowledge. But here's an even bit more basic part. When we did demonstrations, our CEO at the time figured out that since people love that, do not do a demo without having their customized documents. I mean, even if it's just me taking Sean, your Fitzmartin logo and putting it on say invoice and putting it on top of that. Showing that to the finance people makes such a big difference versus we're going to take this document and put it in an electronic folder. Say, Pam, tell us about your current filing cabinet. Take us a picture of that. And then we create that and replicate it. All of a sudden, in that, when they see their tabs on your digital filing cabinet with a document, it says Fitzmartin invoice. Yeah. They're like, whoa, that can work. But it's
that's brilliant. So you just took, I was saying, like, let's focus on access to client expertise.
Sorry.
And you, no, this is brilliant. And you took it to client experience.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. Because if that's the failure point, then give me a taste of what it's like to be a client. Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe I haven't hit the elite level as a purchaser. Maybe I don't have the purchase order in yet, but you're going to give me the experience of what it would be like to be your customer, even though I'm in a pilot or in a, like give them the full, because that would make sense. Like, oh, Donald's mm-hmm. only spent $100,000 with us, but we know there's a pipeline behind that of $10 million lifetime value. Well, let's give them the $10 million experience. Let's not give them the, you placed your first purchase order experience. And really it's kind of the second purchase order where the problems start happening. Oh yeah, Donald reordered. You know, the first time we popped champagne, we were dancing. The second time it's like, well, of course he reordered. We're great. We're awesome. You know, like,
that's Apollo 12.
Who were the astronauts again on that? Or Apollo 19 or whatever they were. Yeah, it's amazing. That's a great demonstration. Yeah. Can you name all four members of U2?
U2?
The band?
Bono.
And The Edge. Nobody ever gets the other two.
Yeah, The Edge.
All right. Look it up. I can't remember it right now.
You got me to do some work now.
Think about it. You're a member of one of the most famous bands in history, and you're one of the two guys nobody can remember your name.
I tell you.
Adam
right? Even Ringo Starr, people know.
Adam Clayton. I think that's one of the other ones. And then I'm blanking out. All millennials are like Googling right now in their mobile while driving. So the last and final tip, application number five, consultative selling tools. Donald, we talked in a separate issue or episode about barriers and how as a consultant, you can break down the buyer's needs into a personal pain, a financial pain, and a strategic pain. Your buyers are trying to solve each one of those at all times. That's just always present. You might say, we're buying a plant, a piece of equipment for a plant. Well, yeah, there's a huge personal risk. You mentioned it earlier. Are you the numbskull that bought the wrong thing right before a recession? Oh, okay. You career killer. Financially, are you the numbskull that spent all of our cash right before a recession? Oh, okay. Bad financial decisions. Strategically, is it, you know, are we in a dead end market space? You've got to, in this consultative selling, address those things. Marketers, you've got to address those. You've got to equip your sales team with this framework, this pain framework. So how would you do that? You would have ways for the sales team to address, to engage, to have maybe diagnostics around each of these three subjects, personal, financial, strategic, or maybe you've got these late stage case studies that we just referred to that you don't publish. They're not designed to get a call to action right off the gate, you know, hey, fill out this lead form. They're designed to be self-help, to demonstrate in a self-help way. I can watch the video without a gate, but it demonstrates what a guide, your business as a guide, can help you solve this personal problem. You know, I hired Donald to do this for my company, and now I'm the highest performing sales vice president in the history of the company. You know, Great. That's a great testimonial for me. But it's good for me to know that somebody else took the risk and I can get through that personal barrier because I'm looking at that personal risk. So those are five application models that you can apply to late stage selling. Some of those applications you're thinking, oh yeah, I could use that. No, science says helping relationships, self-help and guided help is effective at the earliest middle of the funnel, but really it's effective at that closing table. Now, one last note, lifetime value. If 80% of your customers retreat, I don't lose 80% of my customers. Maybe not, but 80% of your customers look, they're still looking, they're getting bombarded. Some of my, I think he's my best client because he sends me, forwards me, everything he gets from another agency. And I think he also knows, he's kind, he's a thoughtful person. I think it's in my best interest. He wants me to see what others are claiming. But every time I get the email, it's like, oh no, you know, and it's not a threat. Really don't think it's a threat, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, Sean, it's just amazing
what some of these dopes out there doing.
Yeah, exactly. But I learn from it every time too. It's good to see what other people are doing. So what can you learn from these techniques? Because helping relationships have to be considered in customer success. So everything we've talked about for the last 2 days should be applied to your current customers.
Amen.
That's all I got. That's all I got to say about that.
I couldn't agree with you more, Sean. I think there's so much here. And as listeners, you go back in and unpack this. I think you can go back. You should listen to this episode multiple times and listen to it with someone, get another team member, because I think there's a lot that we can take and implement in our organization. And I'm just grateful that I was able to participate on this today, Sean. So thank you for allowing me to be here the past couple of episodes.
You're the man. You're incredible because you balance my marketing, my one-sided point of view.
You don't want to get excited.
Our takeaways, I think this key thing is just looking back at, there are six best practices to use at the closing table. Make sure your agency or your marketing team is equipping sales, aligned with sales to the buyer's needs. We call that centricity. Make sure that what they're doing is based on something objective like science, like the transthreatical theorem of behavioral change. And if you don't want to read that, just get the free help that we're offering at fitzmartin.com/free help. So the model's there. You've already found aligned the podcast. And then there's some writing we do as well in our blog. So we look forward to sharing with you more. Donald, I think when we come back, we've got a couple more of these insights about how to close more, how to take, and think about it. You've got two choices. You can close more late stage deals that are already at the finish line, or you can go to the agency or the marketing department and say, I need the most expensive way to get to cash possible with some new leads. Why would we not focus on the end of the journey? So let's make the end of the journey incredibly frictionless. Let's do that by applying centricity. Donald C. Kelly, how do people get in touch with you?
Feel free to go on to LinkedIn, Donald C. Kelly, or go to our website, thesalesevangelist.com. Click on a resource tabs and get access to a bunch of our free stuff.
Amazing. Thank you, Donald. Till the next time.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.